start with a Gemara that gives a little bit of a perspective on the Mishkan, at least in my estimation, and also on Bichlal, what Shmiras HaMitzvos and Torah is. The Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, he told him first to build the Mishkan, the environs of the Mishkan itself, the kroshim and the hangings and so on, and then to make the Aron and the Kelim. And Moshe Rabbeinu turned it around and he told Bezalel the opposite. First to make the Aron and Kelim, and then to make the Mishkan. Bezalel heard that. He said, Lo kach min hago shel olam, this isn't the way of the world. Person doesn't build his furniture and then build a house around it. Because if I make the furniture first, Kelim shani osa lehechan achnisim, where are we going to put the Kelim? It must be that the Rabbanu Shalom told you first to build the Mishkan and then to put in the, then build the Aron and Kelim. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. Bitzel keil ha'isa v'yadata. You were in the shadow of God and you knew. And that's why he was called Bezalel. Bitzel keil. Very, very difficult Gemara. First of all, how could Moshe Rabbeinu turn around what the Rabbanu Shalom said? The Rabbanu Shalom said, Mishkan, Aron, Kelim, and Moshe made it Aron, Kelim, Mishkan. If he made a mistake, that puts the whole Torah into question. Maybe he made a mistake in other things too. And if he did it on purpose, why in the world would he try to fool Yahushua? And secondly, if Yahushua Taka knew what Moshe didn't, right, why is he called Bezalel? Tzel always is a sign of doubt. Shadow of a doubt. Tzilo shel safek, right? Or is a sign of light. So why is he called Bezalel, right? The shadow of God. He should have been called the light of God. He should have been called Orkel, not Bezalel. In order to understand this, I want to start with something else. And somewhere it tells me that we spoke about this, but it can't be because we didn't get to even Parshas Truma at all. I think the last Parsha we spoke about was Mishpatim, perhaps. Okay. So I must be thinking of something else. So in any case, if it sounds familiar, let me know, but I doubt very much that we spoke about this. Torah says that the Aron was gold on the inside and gold on the outside and wood in the middle. And if we learn from that that a Talmud Chacham should be Tocho Kibaro. His inside should be like his outside. Okay. Now if you think about it, that seems to imply that the outside comes first. Because you want to have the outside gold, and you want to make the inside like the outside. But it would seem that that shouldn't be the way it is. The inside, the pnimius, that's the ikar in this world. The chitzonios is tofel. So shouldn't we first speak about what your pnimius is before we speak about the chitzonios? To answer that, I'll tell you a story. When I was a rabbi in Miami, so I had a woman who grew up more, I would say, I hate to give labels, but we'll call it like a light frum. Okay, here they call it dati light. Meaning that in her home they kept Shabbos, but basically all they knew was you don't answer the phone, you don't drive in a car. Hilcha Shabbos, they didn't know too much about. They kept kosher, but like anything that had a K, even in the name of the product, was already considered kosher. That's the way she started her home also. And then she had her first child, and she decided that she wants to become more serious about her Yiddishkeit. So she started to learn about kashrus. They kashered their house, made it, properly kosher. And then she started learning about Shabbos and started keeping Shabbos properly. And this went on slowly, little by little. And she came for hadracha constantly, asking questions and for advice. And then I felt that she's ready for the next stage. The next stage was to start dressing properly according to halacha too. In Miami at the time, the only people who really dressed halachically properly were the wives of the rabbonim and the mechanchim, and most of the regular balabatim, the wives surely didn't cover their hair, the married women, and didn't cover too much else either. So Lamaisa, that was the way it was. So I told her, I think that you're ready to become more serious, since you became more serious about Shabbos and Kashrus, about Tznius too, and I think the time has come that you should start covering your hair. She said to me, Rabbi, I don't think I'm ready for that, because I don't feel inside like a Rebbetzin, and I don't want to look like a Rebbetzin, I'll be a hypocrite. I told her, I'll tell you what you can be compared to. Somebody comes to shul on Simchas Torah, and he says, I don't really feel happy. And if I get up and dance with the Torah, I'm a hypocrite, because people are going to think that I'm happy. So I'm going to sit here and contemplate being happy, and as soon as I'm happy, I'll get up and dance. He'll sit there till Tisha B'Av. How do you get happy? You dance. The chitzonius is ma'orah, the pnimius. It's the externals that bring you to the internals. You can't just get your neshama moving just like this. You have to go through the motions. Motions create emotions. And that's what all the Maisa Mitzvahs are. The Maisa Mitzvahs are to do things externally, to go through the motions, and hopefully they'll bring you to emotions. And therefore, when the Torah says, and therefore I told her, if you'll begin to dress modestly, you'll be able to feel modest. But if you constantly dress immodestly, you're never going to feel on the inside modest from dressing immodestly. And that's not hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is where you want to put on a show and you really don't want to get there. But if you want to get to those inner feelings, but the way to do it is to go through the motions, that's the way of the world. That's the way things are done. The only problem with that is, and that's, we could go through many other sources for this, but it's clear that the externals bring about motions, create emotions. There's only one problem. The Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says, "V'tzipisa oso zahav tahar," you should cover it with gold. How? Mibayis umichutz titzapenu. You should cover it mibayis umichutz, from inside and outside. So which ones come first in the Torah? The inside. So why did Chazal describe the Aron as Tocho Kibaro, that the inside is like the outside, implying that the outside comes first and then the inside is like the outside, when the Torah said first you do the inside and then the outside? So I think the answer is the following. The Torah, Taka, said that you do the outside first and then the inside and then again the outside. How's that? The Pasuk says like this, V'tzipisa oso zahav tahar. You should cover it with gold. If it didn't say anything else, where would the gold be? On the outside, like all the other kelim. Then it says, Mibayis, on the inside. Then you have to cover it on the inside. And then it says, Bachutz, again on the outside. How did that work? There were three boxes, Chazal say. There was a little box of gold, a medium-sized box of wood, and a larger box of gold. They first put the little box of gold, the box of wood inside the big box of gold. So it was covered now on the outside. That's how it started, outside. V'tzipisa oso zahav tahar, cover the outside with gold. Then they put the little gold box inside the wooden box. Now it's covered on the inside. What's missing? The rim. If you look down, you see a sandwich. Now you have to cover the wood of the rim again on the outside with gold. So that was first outside, then inside, and then again outside. What does that imply? It implies the following. Let's go back to the guy dancing on Simchas Torah. Okay? He gets up to dance, and now he feels happy. So now his motions have created emotions. Now should he stop dancing, or should he continue dancing? The answer is continue. Why? Because there's a second purpose for the externals. One purpose is to generate the internals. But there's a second purpose, and that is to express the internals. Because when you express internal feelings concretely, they're much more real. And there is a Ramban who says that. The Ramban is not in his Perush al HaTorah, but it's in a special Perush that he has on Aseres HaDibros, separate sefer. And in that Kuntres al Aseres HaDibros, the Ramban says the following. It's on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. The Sfasemes brings down this Ramban in his Perush on Shir HaShirim on this pasuk. The pasuk says, Mato'iru u'mato'oruru esha ahava ad shetechpots. And he learns it to mean the following. If a person has a tremendous feeling of love, fear, all the other emotions towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not arouse those feelings ad shetechpots until you put it into something concrete, a chefetz. Clothe it in something concrete, because that gives it reality. So just thoughts, feelings, emotions that are ethereal, abstract, and not put into something concrete are not as strong as though those feelings are expressed in a concrete way. So the physical externals have two purposes. One, to generate the feelings, and then once you have them, to express the feelings. You dance in order to feel happy. Now that you're happy, you express your happiness by dancing. So it works on both ends. There is a Moshe Cordovero, Nekubel, says that the neshamos in Gan Eden look forward to Tchias HaMesim like we look forward to Mashiach. They can't wait to be back in a physical world because all of these spiritual feelings are much more concrete when they're expressed in a physical way. Which explains the Ramban Shita. The Ramban holds that Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim are the same thing. And Olam Haba is a physical world. A different kind of physical world than we know now. But a physical world, the neshama in the body, unlike the Rambam who says that Olam Haba is totally a spiritual world. In any case, so they ask on the Ramban, but the Gemara describes Olam Haba as Ein lo bo achila velo shtia, there's no eating and drinking and so on. It doesn't sound like a physical world. Says the Ramban, yes, there is no eating and drinking, but that doesn't mean you don't have a body. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't eat and drink for 40 days. He still had a body. The body won't have to eat or drink, but there'll be a body. So then they ask on the Ramban, so what do you need a body for? If the body, in this world, you need a body to be a foundation for the neshama. Without a body, a neshama can't exist in this world. So you need to eat and drink and maintain the body in order that the neshama should be able to be there. But if you don't have to eat and drink, what do you need a body for? So I think, based on what we just said, the answer is very simple. In this world, you need the physical plant, the body, to generate ruchnius. The body is the foundation for the neshama. And then you need the body also to express the neshama. The body sets the foundation for the neshama, just like the physical things set the foundation for spiritual feelings. And then once you have them, once you have that neshama, the neshama expresses itself and manifests itself through the body. In Olam Haba, you won't need the body to generate the neshama. The neshama will be the ikkar. The neshama will sustain the body. But you still need the body to express the neshama, to give the neshama a way to express itself. That's what you'll need the neshama for. comes out that the physical world has two purposes. One, to generate spiritual emotions, and the other, to express them. Okay, now let's get back to that Gemara. Before the Chetah Egel, there was going to be a Mishkan. The Rabban Shem told Moshe Rabbeinu about the Mishkan before the Chetah Egel. And even though the Rabban Shem knew there was going to be a Chetah Egel, he didn't intimate that to Moshe Rabbeinu, because what Hashem knows does not affect a person's free choice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going to be, yet we still have free choice, which is a miracle. But what human beings know does affect free choice. So the Rabban Shem could not intimate to Moshe Rabbeinu there was going to be a Chetah Egel before it happened. Before the Chetah Egel, what was the purpose of the Mishkan, this physical building? Was it to generate a feeling of God's presence? No. Because Bechol HaMokom Asher Azker Eshmi Ovo Elecho Ve'erachticha, you could feel God's presence everywhere in the world before the Chetah Egel. Once they showed that they needed something physical to concentrate on, to feel God's presence, they needed an intermediary, then the Mishkan had a different purpose. Before the Chetah Egel, the purpose of the Mishkan was not to generate a feeling of God's presence. That you could get everywhere in the world. The purpose of the Mishkan was to come to the Mishkan and use the various kelim to express that feeling, but not to generate the feeling. After the Chetah Egel, there you needed the Mishkan both to generate a feeling of God's presence and to express it. It had two purposes. Before the Chetah Egel, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, he really knew there was going to be a Chetah Egel, and you're going to need the Mishkan both to generate a feeling of God's presence and to express it. But he couldn't tell that to Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe would say, why do I need a Mishkan to generate a feeling of God's presence? We feel God's presence everywhere. And God couldn't let him know there's going to be a Chetah Egel. So the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Dafka, clouded the command and made Moshe Rabbeinu think that first comes the Kelim and then the Mishkan. You use the Kelim to express God's presence, but not to generate it. You don't need the Mishkan to generate it. The main thing is the Kelim, and then you feel God's presence more through the Mishkan. But he bedafka clouded it and hid from him his real intention. When he told it over to Bezalel, it was after the Chetah Egel. They already knew they sinned. So Bezalel said, that's not the way of the world anymore. Now we need a Mishkan first to generate God's presence, a feeling of God's presence, and then to express it, because otherwise, how am I going to use these Kelim if you don't first use the Mishkan to feel God's presence? And that's what Moshe said. Bezalel Kel, you were in that shadow that God made me see it in the other way. He bedafka made it obscure. He shaded it and hid it from me in a shadow. And you understood that shadow. That's why it was called Bezalel. So it comes out before the Chetah Egel, the Mishkan served the purpose of expressing the inner spiritual feelings, but not creating them. And after the Chetah Egel, it had two purposes. One, to create those feelings by going through the motions, and then to express them once they're there. Okay, any questions on that? Yes.
By Moshe, it's only the kelim that were going to be created, not the Mishkan.
The what?
By Moshe.
Yeah.
Was it only the kelim that would be
created? No. So the kelim, you would use that to express your feeling that you got of God's presence everywhere and intensify it. So that the Mishkan would come afterwards. It could be that explains something else also. In Parshas Kisisa, which is before the Chetah Egel, where it starts to speak also about the Mishkan, it mentions Shabbos after the Mishkan. In Parshas Vayakel, it mentions Shabbos before the Mishkan. The fact that it mentions Shabbos before the Mishkan in Vayakel, we learn that the Shabbos supersedes the Mishkan, and you don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. It would seem to imply, so says the Meshech Chochma, that in Kisisa, if we didn't have Ayakel, where it says Shabbos after the Mishkan, that the Mishkan would supersede Shabbos. So I want to explain it in the following way. Shabbos and the Mishkan are only a conflict if the Mishkan is there to bring God's presence to the world. In other words, to make you feel God's presence. Because Shabbos makes you feel God's presence. So what do you need the Mishkan for? It's like not putting on tefillin on Shabbos. Because tefillin are there to make you feel God's presence, and you can feel God's presence on Shabbos. So it's like superfluous. So we don't put on tefillin on Shabbos. Same thing. If the purpose of the Mishkan is to make you feel God's presence, then there's no place for building the Mishkan on Shabbos, because that would imply that Shabbos is not enough. So you don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. But that's only after the Chet HaEgel, where the purpose of the Mishkan was to make you feel God's presence. But before the Chet HaEgel, that wasn't the purpose of the Mishkan. The purpose of the Mishkan was that wherever you would feel God's presence in the world, you'd come to the Mishkan to serve God's presence. Serving God's presence doesn't contradict Shabbos. That's why you make karbonos on Shabbos, and you light fire on the Mizbeach. That doesn't contradict the Shabbos. Serving God's presence does not contradict the Shabbos. Creating the feeling of God's presence does. So before the Chet HaEgel, the Mishkan could be built on Shabbos. But after the Chet HaEgel, then you couldn't build the Mishkan on Shabbos anymore. Okay. Next thing, let's speak about Big Day Kahuna. Yes?
So according to this Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu got the command for the Mishkan before the
Chet. Right. He was on the Har Sinai during those 40 days. They only made the Chet at the end of the 40 days. Okay. But he told it over to them after the Chet HaEgel.
Does Rashi say that also?
Rashi says that all of these things were done before the Chet, pretty much. When he came down, he told them the Mishkan. But that's when he told Bnei Israel. It's not when he got the Tzibui. Okay. Speak about Big Day Kahuna. Torah says two purposes for Big Day Kahuna. Lekadsho lekahanoli. They brought out the Kedusha of the Kohanim. And lekavod litiferes. And according to many Rishonim, they were an honor and a glory for the Kohen. When people looked at the Kohen, they saw a very honored and glorious person dressed in these glorious clothing. So it was an honor and a glory for the Kohen, and it also brought out the Kedusha. And that is really the function of clothing in general and the concept of Tznius. Some people think that Tznius is covering the body because there's something lewd and bad about the body, so you have to cover it. But that's absurd, because the body is a creation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's nothing bad or lewd about the body. And if, in fact, that would be the reason for covering your body, then we most certainly should cover the body of animals. Because if a human body is something wrong with it, surely animal bodies are even worse. And I don't know anybody yet, maybe tomorrow somebody will come up with that chumrah, that doesn't go to the zoo because the animals are not clothed. And in fact, the only place I know where they clothe their animals is in Los Angeles, and that has nothing to do with Sneas because they don't clothe themselves. So that is not what Sneas is. So what is Sneas? Before the Chet of Adam and Chava, it was clear that human beings are neshamos. That's what we are. We are neshamos. We were created as neshamos. We existed for thousands of years under God's throne, whatever that means, as neshamos. We could function very nicely as a neshama. We could see without eyes and hear without ears and get around without arms and legs in a spiritual world. But when we came into this physical world, we needed like an astronaut. An astronaut, as long as he's on the earth, can function very nicely without any special apparatus or suit. But when he goes into outer space, he needs a special suit and special apparatus to function. There's no oxygen there, so he needs an oxygen apparatus. There's no air pressure, he needs a pressurized suit. There's no sound waves, he needs a radio to talk through. When he comes back to Earth, he takes off the suit. So too, as long as we were in a spiritual world, we could function as neshamas without any extra apparatus. But when our neshama came into this world, we needed a body to be able to function. We need eyes to see and ears to hear, but that's not us. That's a suit of clothing we wear in this physical world. When we leave this world and go back to the spiritual world, we leave that suit of clothing here. And could be that's one of the reasons why we express mourning when somebody dies by tearing our clothing. To show that it's only the clothing that's been torn away, but the essence of the person still exists. So we are not our bodies. Our neshamas, which we are clothed in a body. So that's why it refers to the body as basar adam, al basar adam. It's the flesh of a human being. It's not the human being. It's just the flesh of the human being. Before the chait of Adam and Chava, it was clear that the neshama is the main thing, and the body serves the neshama. Because they were in total harmony. It didn't last too long, a few hours. Once Adam and Chava sinned, they used their bodies against their neshama, not in the best interest of the neshama. So now it's confusing. If the body is only there to serve the neshama, here the body is functioning against the neshama. So maybe the body's the main thing, not the neshama. Not only that, maybe there is no neshama. All I see is a body. Maybe that's all there is. So in order to emphasize that what you see is not all there is, we cover the body to distract attention from a body that could be attracting and distracting, and make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. Instead of letting the body be attracting and distracting, right, the Torah said cover the body, those parts of the body that could be distracting and make you think that that's all there is, make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. And that's basically what a person says when he dresses properly, right? I am not a body. I'm not an animal. An animal is only a body. There is no neshama, so there's nothing to cover. We only cover where there's an inner kedusha, and you want to make it clear that the externals are only a suit of clothing that the body wears. We cover the externals to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. Yes?
So why do women have to cover themselves more?
If you hold on, I'll try to answer that. Not that I don't have an answer, it's just that it's a little bit off the topic, and I want to finish this first, okay? There are three places, it'll fit into what I'm going to say now, so I'll fit it in. There are three places where Tznius is extra special. One place, it says the Mishkan. When the Mishkan was finished, the Rabban Shalom said, Kan Yofa HaTznius. And therefore the Mishkan was covered in coverings like a kala. It had a veil in the front and a train in the back. Mamish like a bride. Now the Mishkan was not erotic or lewd that it had to be covered. So what's the concept of tznius by the Mishkan? To illustrate it, I once heard a story that some children of Rav Shlomo Shvadron Zatzal were by the Kosel on a Shabbos, and they saw an Israeli writing a kvittel on Shabbos and putting it in the wall. So they ran over to him, and they thought maybe somebody in his house is deathly ill, and he thinks that it's pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to write. So he said, what are you doing? It's Shabbos. He said, I know. He said, but I'm the captain of a soccer team, Israeli soccer team, and we have a big match coming up this week, and I put in a wish in the wall that we should win. Now, if that's what the Kosel HaMaravi, or the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan is, then it's Avodah Zorah. What's the difference between mirror, mirror on the wall, or wall, wall on the ground? Right? It's put in a wish for the wall. The purpose or the greatness of that wall is that the Shechinah is there, not the wall. Therefore, since wherever there's an inner Kedusha, but you can be distracted and mistaken of going after the externals, There you have to cover the externals to distract attention from them and make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. That's the Mishkan. Second place, Talmidei Chachamim. Talmidei Chachamim have to dress and act in a much more tsanua way than a regular person. It's one of the reasons why Talmidei Chachamim wear longer coats. For that reason. So, why? Is a Talmud Chacham more erotic than a regular person? Obviously not. So what's the idea? It says, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira L'Rabos Talmidei Chachamim. You have to stand in awe and fear a Talmud Chacham like you do the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's a very dangerous thing. Because if you direct that towards himself, towards his personality, it's Avodah Zorah. What do you stand in awe and fear the Talmud Chacham? His Torah, not him. If you direct it towards him, it becomes a personality cult, and unfortunately there are dangers like that of people venerating Talmidei Chachamim and making them into gods, idols. So, therefore, the Talmud Chacham has to distract attention from his person and say, what you have to fear and stand in awe and respect is not me, but the Torah that I possess. Second, the third place, and this will answer your question, where Tznius is extra special is by women. Why women? Because in the secular world, okay, women are basically judged on their external attributes. And even though we live in a progressive and liberated world, there still are Miss Universe pageants, Miss America pageants, Miss Israel pageants. And even though they say that they have changed them, and the women now read poetry that they wrote, and they speak about their careers, but it's all done in bathing suits, which has me believe that the careers and the poetry is not the ikker. The women, for whatever reason, that's why I don't want to go off the topic, the Rabbanu Shel Olam made women and men attracted to each other because he wants people to get married, he wants them to have children, he wants them to create a home, and he wants them to be mamish as one person. Physically, spiritually, emotionally, because that's the way the Rabbanu Shel Olam created a human being, male and female in one body. And then he separated them. And the perfection of a human being is when they are back together again, in every way, physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever. In order to generate that, or in order to solidify that, the Rabbanu Shel Olam made a very strong attraction between men and women. It's the second strongest drive that a human being has, aside from the drive for survival. After your drive to survive is the attraction between men and women. It's a very, very strong attraction. And it's meant to be like that. And just like anything can be used for the good or used for the bad. At the proper time and the proper way, it's meant to be good. The wrong time and the wrong way, it could be the worst tumah. It could be the greatest kedusha. Kedushin is kedusha. Or it could be gili arayis and tumah. It depends how you use it. Zelu uma ze osu elokin. Specifically, the physical attributes of a woman are what attracts a man. And a woman is attracted to men, I can't say for sure, since I never was a woman, and I don't plan to be one either. So I can't say for sure, but you are women, so you can understand that, yes, men are attracted or attractive to women more than just their physical looks. There's more different thing. There are many studies that have, not religious or Jewish studies, secular studies, that point that out. In many ways. I'm not going to go into it now. But in any case, that seems to be the fact. Why it's like that is up to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and there are explanations, but that's the way it is. But part of that attraction, which is part of the physical attraction, is for a good purpose. But it's to enhance the spiritual connection also. But if all there is the physical attraction, then people basically are being treated like animals, and judged only on their externals. So therefore, since in the secular world, women are judged pretty much on their external attributes, on their external beauty, so, and from a Torah standpoint, a woman is the foundation of Kedusha in Klal Yisrael. And that's not just something I said to make you feel good. It's true. Because what determines whether any human being has a Nishmas Yisrael, Kedushas Nishmas Yisrael, or not? What is the factor, almost the only factor, who your mother was? If your mother was Jewish, your father could have been Genghis Khan. You have a Jewish neshama. And if your father was Moshe Rabbeinu, but your mother wasn't Jewish, you're not Jewish and you don't have a Jewish neshama. So, up until recently, mothers were women. And therefore, women are the foundation of Kedusha in Klal Yisrael. So therefore, if you could be distracted by the externals, especially by women, and think that's all there is, therefore the Torah says a woman has to be extra tzanua to make the statement, I'm not a body. There's more to me than meets the eye, and that's the ikkar. I am the foundation of Kedusha. And that's what the ikkar is. So therefore, women also, same thing, wherever there's an inner Kedusha, and you could be distracted and by the externals, we cover the externals in order to emphasize that there's more here than meets the eye. There's only one problem. And that is that the externals are also important, because the Torah makes a big deal about it. The Torah says that Sari Menu was Meya Shana, the Esrim Shana, the Sheva Shanim. She was as beautiful as 20 as she was at 7. Who cares if she was beautiful or she was an ugly hag? She was Sari Menu. Made a difference what she looked like? Obviously, yes. Yosef Atzadik was Yefei Toar v'Yefei Mara. Who cares? He was handsome. Torah cares. Rachel Imenu was Yefei Toar v'Yefei Mara. Who cares? So, obviously, external beauty is also important. The only problem is, what is external beauty? Because really, it's a very subjective cultural thing. And that's a very positive thing also, because not everybody considers the same things beautiful. So everybody finds, as my mother-in-law used to say, there's a cover for every pot. And everybody finds their shidduch or whatever, and some people couldn't imagine what in the world does he want with that, or she want with that, and they're attractive to that person. And it goes even more than that. In deepest Africa, there's a tribe called the Ubangis. You'll be very happy that you are not a Ubangi, because they have a quaint custom that when their daughters are young, they put a half saucer in their mouth between their upper lip and their gum. And stretches their upper lip. As it stretches and they get older, they put a bigger saucer. So when they're your age, their upper lip sticks out about a foot. If you ever saw pictures of Ubangi women who are called Sari, S-A-R-I, I don't know if that had to do with Sari Menu, but in any case, they have an upper lip that sticks out about a foot. And if you don't have an upper lip that sticks out a foot, you'll never find the shidduch amongst the Ubangis. In our culture, if you have an upper lip that sticks out a foot, you go and spend thousands of dollars by an orthodontist to fix it, or you'll never find the shidduch. I had a daughter who needed orthodonture work. I was thinking of sending her to Africa to the Ubangis. It would have been much cheaper. Except the shidduchim over there were a little too black for me. So I was... So what's beautiful? It says that Esther, Motzachain be'ein, Noseschain be'einei koroel. Everybody thought Esther was charming. So how could it be? The Ubangis thought she was charming only if she had an upper lip that stuck out a foot. And the Americans thought she was charming if she didn't have an upper lip that stuck out a foot. So how could she be charming to everybody? The answer is, there is a certain beauty Let's go back to Sari Meinu for a second. It says that Sari Meinu was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. From this side of the fence, it would appear to me that a 20-year-old woman is prettier than a 7-year-old girl. Okay? So what does it mean that she was as pretty at 20 as she was at 7? There's a certain beauty of a 7-year-old girl that spans all cultures. It's not that subjective kind of beauty. It's the beauty of the innocence of youth. It's a different kind of beauty. That is universal. And it doesn't depend on external attributes. It's a certain inner innocence that everybody recognizes as something that is admirable. That's the beauty of Sari Meinu. It wasn't the cultural, subjective kind of beauty that changes from culture to culture or even from year to year. But it was an expression of the inner beauty she had, that when you looked at her, you saw that inner beauty. That's the external beauty that the Torah speaks about. So, beauty is important as an expression of the inner beauty that a person has. When a person dresses properly, they're supposed to give the image of a neshama kedosha. You see there, in the way that they dress tastefully. Not, what's it called? You can be attractive, just not attracting. You dress in an attractive way, men and women, that present the inner kedusha that you have. So, the ikur is to cover your body so you don't think that the body is the ikur. But you cover it in a tasteful way that makes the body the presentation of what is there beneath the surface, the kedusha. Otherwise, we really shouldn't wear clothing, the kind of clothing we wear. We should wear tents. Everybody should have a tent around them, cover their entire faces with their two eyes out, and that'd be the ultimate tzius. Nobody even knows you have a body. We wear clothing that accent the body to a certain degree. You see, you have arms and legs, you have a body. Because we're not trying to hide the body. We're just trying to distract attention from thinking the body is the ikur, in order that the body then should convey that inner kedusha, which is the ikur. That is the ultimate. You can cover every part of your body and still not be tsanua if the message you give in the way that you cover it is that you're an animal, that your body is the ikur. But if you cover your body in a tasteful, attractive way, not attracting way, right? And then when somebody looks at you, they see that refinement of what is your inner kedusha, that's the ultimate tznius. So, therefore, by the Big Day Kahuna, it was the same thing. The Kohanim wore clothing to distract attention from their external body, because that's not what the Kohen is. The Kohen's not a body. The kahuna is the neshama of the Kohen. So we cover the body of the Kohen, l'kadsho l'kanoli, to accent and accentuate that there's something more here than just a body. The Kohen is a neshama, kedosha. At the same time, that same clothing, aside from covering and distracting attention from the externals, also relayed and represented that inner kedusha externally in clothing that were l'kavod l'tiferes. And therefore clothing is called begodim, comes from the word bogade, to be a traitor. Because the body worked against the neshama, you need to wear clothing. Because the body is a bogade. So you have to cover that. And it's also called levush, lo busha, take away your busha. Their busha means embarrassment. It also means to be inhibited. You can't do everything you think. Some things you have to hold in. So that's another thing, to take away the busha. And clothing is also called mechabdusi, that which honors me. Because it reflects externally the inner honor a person has. So clothing serves two purposes. One, to bring out the inner kedusha by covering the body, so it shouldn't be distracting, that one should be distracted from realizing what the ikar is, At the same time, the clothing is supposed to relay and convey externally that inner kedusha. So there's a connection between the two. So the big day kahuna were both lekadsho lekanoli, and they were also the kavod or the tiferes. Okay. Okay, one more point, and then I think we're not going to have too much more time. Yeah, let me tell you an interesting story. And this, as we get towards the end of the year, and especially some of you are going home for Pesach, I think the message is a very important one. I'll tell you the story first, and then I'll tell you the Dvar Torah that goes along with it. In Miami, I had a girl in my kehillah. She must have been about 16. She was a balas tshuva, I think through NCSY. And she lived alone with her mother. She was an only child. Her father was out of the picture. I don't know if he died. I never knew her father. Never knew what happened to him. Or if he was around. He wasn't around in there. She only grew up with her mother. Her mother knew nothing about Yiddishkeit. Zero. Completely ignorant of anything to do with Yiddishkeit. But she was a very good mother. And she accommodated this girl whatever she needed to be from. She bought her a whole new wardrobe of clothing. She made the house kosher. She wasn't Michal Shabbos in the house in front of the girl. She was a tzaddikus, this mother. She wasn't from, but she was a very, very fine woman. She went, did everything. But she didn't know anything. So she used to call me all the time, and her daughter would come up with some new thing, you know, that she found out. And the mother wanted to know, is this really necessary? Right? My daughter came home with this really crazy idea or whatever. She can't wear clothing that's linen and wool together, and she has to have it checked. So I would explain to her, yes, it is. Or sometimes the girl misunderstood things. And one day the mother calls me, and she says, Rabbi, aren't you an Orthodox rabbi? I said, yeah. She said, then how come you don't eat kosher? I said, what? What do you mean? She said, because my daughter came home today, and she told me we can't buy meat in the butcher shop that you and the other rabbis endorse, because it's not kosher. Why? What happened? In those days, there was one glatt kosher butcher shop in Miami that was supervised by the Rabbanim. I was one of them. We got the meat in from Denver. It was glatt kosher meat, OU meat, whatever. There was a group in the community, mostly Hasidim, who wanted Hasidish Shechita. Not that this meat was no good, they would eat it too. But they preferred having some extra Hidurim in the Shochtim. For instance, in Hasidish Shechita, the Shochet has to have a beard. Right? That's not the Iker, but that's an extra. Okay? Halacha-wise, if a Shochet shaves in a permissible way, then it's okay. They wanted Shochtim with beards. And similarly, there are some other Hidurim. So they decided they're going to bring in this kind of meat for themselves. They couldn't bring it for the whole community. It was much too expensive, and it wasn't practical. So they decided getting together, and they'll bring in this meat for anybody who wants it. So they had to bring it in like twice a year. You had to buy a special freezer because you had to buy a whole four quarters of an animal at a time. You had to go about 30 miles each way to pick it up at one central place, and it cost about three times as much as the regular meat. But anybody who wanted, those Hidurim, got it. So this girl found out about this special meat, and she decided that's the only kosher meat. So she told her mother, we're going to have to buy a freezer, you're going to have to go 30 miles each way, pick up this meat twice a year, and we're going to have to spend three times the amount for the meat. So the woman calls me and she says, I don't understand. Why can't my daughter buy in the butcher shop where you buy your meat? I thought you're Orthodox. She tells me it's not kosher. So I said, I'll take care of it. I called the girl in and I told her the following Dvar Torah. It says that the Aron was gold on the inside and gold on the outside, right, to tell me that a Talmud Chacham should be Tocho Kibaro, gold on the inside, gold on the outside. The Das Genami Balei Atosis asked a very simple question. If that's the symbol of the Aron, then wouldn't it have been better if the Aron was solid gold? No wood at all. It's not gold on the inside, gold on the outside. Solid gold. That's a much better symbol. He says, yes, it would have been symbolically much better if the Aron was solid gold. But a box of those dimensions, solid gold, couldn't have been carried. It's too heavy to carry. He says, the Aron carried the people who carried it. That's a miracle. Ein somchem al hanes. So it had to be able to be carried in a natural way. That's what he says. What I told the girl is the following. Sometimes it's great to be solid gold, as long as you're not too heavy to carry. Meaning, if you would be married, and you had to buy the freezer, and you had to spend three times the amount of money on the meat, and you had to, make the trip, then if you want to be mahadar and you want to be solid gold, matovu manoyim. But you're not the one who's doing it. It's your mother who's carrying you. She has to make the trip. She has to buy the freezer. So maybe it's better not to be solid gold. You shouldn't be too heavy to carry. Sometimes it's very nice to be machmir in things, and nice to be mahadar. But if the people that are the ones that are going to have to carry you, it's too much for them, then maybe better you should wait for the hidurim till you're the one who's carrying yourself instead of somebody else carrying you. V'day l'chakima b'remiza. You're here in a very spiritual environment, in a hot house to a certain degree, where it's very nice. You've found out many, many things that you haven't done in the past or your parents don't do. And if they're halachas, so there's a mitzvah and a nice way to give tochacha. Right, very hard to give tochacha to a parent properly, so you have to find out how to get the message across in the proper way. That's for next year. But there are certain things that are not halacha, and they're nice sidurim, and if you would be married and on your own, they'd be great things to be mahadar. But at this point, the halacha wise, it's fine, and the hidurim are things that your parents are going to have to carry, like Chol of Yisrael, maybe, like some other things that, especially in the States, are not considered halachic, but hidurim, right? And what's a hidur and what's a halacha is also something you need direction in. So you have to ask somebody, right? I learned this, and that this is usher on Shabbos. Is it usher, or is just, there are opinions say it's okay, but better to do this way? If it's better to do this way, and your parents do the other way, and there are those that say that it's okay, then maybe that shouldn't be something that you stand on your head and throw a tantrum about, right? Because you want to save your parents from Chil Shabbos, and therefore you want them to go out and spend exorbitant amounts of money or do things that are oppressive to them when what they're doing is okay, but it's not the most mahudr way of doing things. So wait till you get married, do it in your mahudr way, and leave your parents alone. Right, or do it for yourself and don't make them carry you. So sometimes it's very nice to be solid gold, but if you're too heavy to carry by the people who have to carry you, then maybe it's good to have a little wood on the inside too. Where that applies, again, is only to those areas that are not halacha, but hidurim, and what falls into those categories is something you have to ask for advice from.